Chapter 22. Haste. He comes awake to afternoon sunlight and a warm breeze that carries the scent of clean linens and starch and just the faintest hint of disinfectant. Hospital, he thinks, before he even opens his eyes. Hospital means Ran got help, and help means Konoha, and Konoha means... Rise and shine, sleeping beauty, a familiar voice drawls to his left. I have to admit, you had me thinking we were going to need to find someone to administer a kiss. I'd offer, of course, but Raido's a tad bit possessive. Last time I had to flirt for a mission, he... Genma-san, Kurama groans, and if he were willing to move and test his body's recovery, he'd drape an arm over his eyes or shove his head under the pillow. I work with both of you, and I'd like to be able to meet Raido's eyes sometime before next year. Keep that to yourself, please. Genma laughs, rich and throaty, and a moment later a warm, calloused hand closes loosely around Kurama's wrist. You bastard, he says fondly. What the hell were you thinking having an S-rank fight right on Konoha's doorstep? The way I hear it, you almost gave the Anbu patrol on the western wall a heart attack. They thought a Kage was being killed or something. Kurama snorts disgustedly, opening his eyes and blinking in the unexpected brilliance of the sunlight streaming through the window. No Kage, just me. I take it Ran got help then? As he reaches out to thoughtfully draw the curtains, Genma huffs a disbelieving laugh. Your Kitsune summons? Yeah, she came bursting into the station and gave 90% of the shinobi their heart failure. I'll assume she takes after you. You say that like I startle people half to death on a daily basis, Kurama protests, trying to judge whether or not he feels well enough to sit up. A moment's hesitation, and then he mentally dismisses the concern. Either it will hurt or it won't. Dithering isn't going to change anything. You said it, not me. Careful. Genma's sharp brown eyes narrowed in concern, but he says nothing as Kurama painfully... gradually eases into a sitting position and glances around. It's a hospital room, definitely, and a fairly barren one at that, which is slightly surprising. At the very least, Team 7 should have visited him, and more than likely Naruto would have entirely refused to leave if they did. So this absence... Team 7? He demands. Genma studies him intently, then sighs and settles back in his chair, crossing his arms over his chest. I assume it's too much to ask that you stay in bed, regardless of what I tell you? He asks wryly. Kurama levels him with a flatly furious look. Genma! Sheesh, just askin'. The Tokujo raises his hands in surrender. Team 7 left shortly after you did for a C-rank escort and protection detail. Mission time frame put them out of the village for at least 2 weeks. C-rank. The pieces click together in Kurama's mind, and he goes stiff. Genma, where? Wave, the older man answers, but his expression is grimly considering. You know something. It's not a question. Kurama closes his eyes and presses his hands over them, wondering how everything could have gone so wrong so quickly. First the damn spy and her bloodline, then Tobi, then this. I have contacts in Wave, he explains, and it's not even entirely a lie. He just doesn't have them yet. The situation there is not good. Genma blows out a short, heavy breath, pinching the bridge of his nose. Fuck, he mutters, and it's rare to hear him swear in earnest. You've been sleeping for 2 days, fighting off whatever your target did to you. Kakashi and his brats left 4 days ago. Even traveling slowly to accommodate a civilian, they would have made it over the border yesterday at the very least. Likely before that. Damn, damn, damn! Kurama has to fight down the angry surge and snap of his chakra for the first time in a very long while, as his control wavers. He knows that they all survived the wave mission in his timeline, knows that the Genin are far better trained now than his team ever was. But that's the problem. They're better trained, more ready to fight and defend, and so much closer to being killed because of it. What if Zabuza doesn't hold back this time? There were moments before where he could have killed them, but didn't. What if their resistance this time means their deaths? It's not something he can stand to contemplate, that in giving them strength he might have also indirectly pushed them toward their deaths. Kurama grits his teeth and reins himself in, wrenching violet chakra back underneath his skin as it manages to escape. "I'll tell the Hokage," Genma says grimly. "Even if it's just a second-hand rumor you heard, it'll be enough to keep him from risking a Genin team. He'll probably send reinforcements just in case." A quick, glancing touch to Kurama's shoulder, half a heartbeat of comfort, and then the Tokujō is out the door. Kurama follows him with his senses, until his chakra fades into the distance, then grits his teeth and grimly swings his legs over the side of the bed. Pain sparks across his nerve endings, but he pushes it down, ignores it as he rises to his feet. Loss is pain. Sorrow is pain. Bodily wounds are a mere irritation in the grand scheme of things. Kurama has never been bothered by the physical. Not really. Only the emotional is true agony, and he'll do anything in his power to prevent himself from feeling the pain of losing someone precious again. Anything at all, and more besides. His clothes are gone, but there's a fresh jonin uniform in the correct size folded in one of the closets, and Kurama takes it without pause, ducking into the bathroom to change. He rolls up the sleeves to leave his seals bare, and snatches up the hitayate that was left beside his bed. Ginkaze is leaning against the wall, and his weapons pouches are stacked neatly beside it. Blessing Medic Nin, who are used to dealing with paranoid, possessive jonin, Kurama ties them on as well. By all rights, he should wait for Genma to return, or for the Sandaime to summon him. But even now, there's a dull ache throbbing through him, a constant reminder of the fact that he's injured and not healing quite as fast as he should. Sarutobi will confine him to this hospital room, forbid him from going anywhere. And maybe it's the right decision, looking at things from the outside. But it's not the right decision for Kurama. Team 7 could be in danger. And that's reason enough to go to their sides, regardless of what stands in his way. He leaves a note for whoever comes looking for him with as much information on Gato and Wave as he has time to give, then slips out the window. His ribs are aching lightly with even that little strain, and the stab wound in his other side is a sharper, throbbing hurt, but Kurama shuts them out as he ghosts away from the hospital. No one even glances at him twice, which, in a shinobi village, is about the best one can ask for. People will remember him, because the majority of them are trained to, but no one's going to stop him. Not yet, at least. A stand of trees, thick and obscuring, edges a bend of the road, and Kurama slips through the wide trunks like a shadow, then pauses in a patch that's relatively clear of undergrowth. Teeth to his thumb and three drops of blood, and thick gray smoke swirls up around him, dissipating in a moment. When it clears, there's a tall silver fox standing stately in the green-touched darkness, watching Kurama with curious golden eyes. "Kurama," he says after a thoughtful moment, sitting on his haunches and wrapping his eight tails around his paws. "You're hurt. Ran said you called her for a fight." Another beat, and he tips his head to one side, ears flattening against his head, and asks dryly, "Are you supposed to be upright yet?" Kurama waves him off. "You worry too much, Momiji. I'm fine." The silver fox snorts. "I noticed you didn't answer my question, Kurama." The problem with trying to mislead foxes is that, being tricksters themselves, it rarely works. Kurama winces faintly. "I need your help," he he says instead of replying. Do you have enough strength for a trip? Momiji's ears perk up with interest, then immediately fold back again, and he whines softly. If I say yes while you're still injured, Ume will have my tails. So we don't tell her, Kurama offers quickly, though he also cringes at the thought. Ume isn't the oldest of his summons, or the most powerful, but she's certainly the bossiest, and the most overprotective, which, with his summons, is saying something. It's not like she won't have my head for it, too. Just our secret, okay? Momiji looks far too pleased with that idea. Sure, I'm good with that. He rises to his feet, gives a lithe stretch, and then crouches low. Muscles bunch, and with a single, powerful bound, he springs into the air. There's a glimmer of chakra, then violet and gold flames flare into existence around each of his paws, carrying him up as though gravity has ceased to matter. He turns a graceful loop through a sunbeam of light, making his silver coat glow, and sweeps around the trees before returning to settle in front of Kurama. Amazing as always, Momiji, Kurama says fondly. He reaches out and twines his fingers in the fox's long ruff, then vaults onto his back and settles in behind his shoulders. Momiji isn't as bulky as Ran, but he's the second largest of Kurama's summons, leggier than the Black Vixen and leanly strong, with an affinity for chakra techniques of all types and a knack for flight. Preening faintly, Momiji waits for him to get a good grip, then pushes off the ground and rises through the air like a wayward cloud. Where to? He asks, turning a wide circle above the treetops. Kurama points off to their left. Wave country. Follow the road, please, but go quickly. Naruto, Sakura, and Sasuke might be in danger. The kits? Momiji snarls, low in his throat. Like hell. Another bounding leap forward and they're soaring, faster than any bird, as Momiji's foxfire carries them away from the village. Towards Wave, and Kurama can only grit his teeth and hope beyond all possible hope that they'll make it in time. Naruto leans back on his hands, staring mutinously up at the stars. It's pretty here in Wave, far more open to the sky, and what trees there are tend to twist and turn as they grow down towards the water, rather than standing straight and tall as they reach for the sun. The air smells of brine and faintly of fish, but it's somehow soft, easy as it slides down his throat. Kurama-ni would like it, Naruto thinks, and tries to keep from scowling. They left for their mission before Kurama could get back from his, and it's unsettling. Naruto would have never thought, just a few months ago, that he could so quickly get accustomed to someone's presence in his life. Before Kurama, he never really had anyone like that. Sure, Iruka-sensei looked after him, and Gigi sometimes took him out to lunch or let him wander around the Hokage's office, but they weren't always there. More often than not, they had other things to do. Kurama wasn't like that. No matter what else was going on, he always had time for Naruto, and more recently for Sasuke and Sakura as well. Naruto can ask him anything, bother him with the littlest things, and he seems happy. Like it's not just okay, but he's glad that Naruto comes to him. And now Naruto can't imagine him not being there, which is strange, because even if Naruto hasn't lived very long, the amount of time Kurama's been in his life is still a tiny percentage. 2 months, just about. But Naruto's still happier than he's ever been before. Do you have someone who is important to you? The girl, the boy, in the forest had asked him that, after waking him up from his jutsu training. And Naruto's very first thought had been of his cousin. Sasuke and Sakura, too, of course. They'd been sleeping sprawled out a short distance away. And Naruto still half wonders why the strange boy hadn't woken them, too. But figures it must be because he was snoring loudest. And Kakashi, Iruka, and the Hokage. They're all precious, all dear. But Kurama is Kurama is the one who showed him that it's all right to have precious things, and show it, and be glad for it. A hair ruffle, a hug, a kiss on the forehead, a whispered, "Well done," or, "I'm proud of you, Naruto." Those things have come to mean the world to him. He wonders if he can call Kurama a father figure. But that's not entirely right. He's not even a big brother. That's what Iruka seems to be. Definitely not a grandfather. And not just a friend, either. Even cousin seems too weak a word, because surely distant cousins don't care like Kurama does. Maybe the only appropriate word is just family. Kurama is family, and that's all he needs to be. Naruto thinks of Inari, crying over the death of his family, his hero, even as he denies that heroes exist. It's a weak sort of refusal to give. Naruto can recognize that well enough. But it's also sad, because Inari's dad died for a reason, and for Inari to deny that reason, it makes his death cheap, meaningless. It's close to cruel, but mostly just really sad. Soft footsteps sound behind him, a bare scuff in the night's hush, and then with a soft sigh, Sasuke drops down on his left as Sakura settles on his right. Neither one says anything, but just them being there feels like warmth creeping under Naruto's skin and settling in the very heart of him. The silence stretches, expectant but not pressing, and at length Naruto huffs out a breath and scrubs his hands over his eyes. "What's the point in crying like that?" he asks crossly. "What's it ever going to get him beyond everybody thinking he's just a snot-nosed baby?" Naruto hasn't cried himself in a very long time. He can still remember when he did, when he'd sobbed and carried on and hoped that somebody would notice. But no one ever had. It hadn't made him friends or brought his parents back or made anyone like him more. He'd just cried and felt sorry for himself and done nothing until he finally stopped wailing and tried. Now he has friends, two best friends, and a cousin who tells Naruto he's proud of him, and a teacher who thinks they're a good team. Crying wouldn't have given him any of that. Not ever. Sasuke gives a grunt of clear agreement, but Sakura bites her lip. "I think Inari-kun is just scared," she says carefully, clearly still considering the situation. "He probably just doesn't want to lose anyone close to him. But he's not a shinobi. He doesn't have our training, and he's never actually had to be brave before. Not really. Not in the way he needs to be now, or the way we all had to be against the Demon Brothers or Zabuza." Naruto shivers a little, remembering both of those incidents. "I wasn't brave," he says with disgust. "I froze up." "Only at first," Sasuke counters sharply. "Then we took them down. We all did." They share a moment of silence, recalling it. Kakashi supposedly dead, Tazuna helpless, the two missing nin so close and ready to kill them. Sasuke had attacked first, while Naruto and Sakura were still stunned and unmoving. He'd gone after the Chunin pair, and only a moment later, Naruto and Sakura realized what he was doing alone and plunged into the fray after him. Sakura with her new poison senbon, and Naruto with what close-range jutsus Kurama had taught him, and they'd won! 3 genin against 2 chunin-level missing nin, and they'd beaten them, covered each other, and watched each other's backs, and attacked the way they'd trained for. It had worked! Zabuza. With Zabuza, they were outmatched. That much was glaringly clear. But they'd still held him off, distracted him long enough for Kakashi to get free, and stayed alive doing it. That counts for a victory, right? Enough of one, at least. "We did it," Naruto agrees, and grins. "We won! Believe it! And when Zabuza comes crawling back, we'll help Kakashi-sensei do it all over again." "Agreed." Sakura is smiling, arms clasped loosely around her drawn-up legs, and chin resting on her knees as she stares out into the dark forest before them. We can't be the next sun, then, if we don't make it through our first two-week mission, right?
Right,
Sasuke agrees, falling backwards to splay out on the grass.
Are we going to train again?
Naruto's knee-jerk reaction is to say yes and bolt for their little clearing, but...
No,
he mutters, lying back next to Sasuke and closing his eyes.
Let's just sleep, okay?
Because of that boy finding our clearing? Sakura asks, sounding faintly amused. The one you said was prettier than me?
Naruto blanches.
Sakura-chan, I didn't mean it like that. He was just... I just...
Thankfully, she just laughs and flops down next to the boys.
It's all right, Naruto, she tells him kindly. Someday, I'll find someone who appreciates me, body and mind. I already know you guys just want me for my brain and my medical ninjutsu.
Sakura-chan!
Sasuke sounds derisive, but at the same time slightly abashed.
At least you're not a fangirl anymore, he mutters, looking away.
With a roll of his eyes at the brunette, Naruto quickly adds, Besides, Sakura-chan, without you we wouldn't even have a goal. You're the one who started talking about the sannin.
Because I'm a genius.
She sounds smug, and rolls halfway over both boys to scuff at their hair, surreptitiously grinding their faces into the dirt while she's at it.
You're grateful, right?
Right? Sasuke splutters, Naruto cries for mercy, and Sakura laughs at them both with that particular, fiendish sort of glee found only in the very closest of friends and siblings.
Precious, Naruto thinks, and he feels warm down to his very soul.
When a person has something important to protect, that's when they can truly become strong.
Kurama, he thinks. Sasuke, Sakura, Kakashi-sensei, Iruka-sensei, Hokage-jiji. They're what's important. They're what I'll protect. No matter what.
Fear or hesitation or whatever, it doesn't matter. Because no matter how many times Naruto feels scared or overwhelmed or outmatched, he's got a reason to push through it, to move on. His village, his team, his family, that's what matters. Nothing more and nothing less. And Naruto knows, down to the very depths of his heart, that such a belief will never, ever change.
Momiji flies until his foxfire is flickering and his sides are heaving as he pants for breath. Only then does he allow Kurama to coax him back to the ground. They camp right next to the road, too tired to worry about the dangers. The fox is asleep within minutes of touching down, curled into a tight ball among the roots of a particularly weathered tree. But Kurama resists the pull of exhaustion for a few more minutes, occupied with his spinning, twisting thoughts. He's doing this for the genin, because too much has changed to be sure of their safety. For Kakashi, who will break entirely if he loses another team member. For Wave, caught in the grip of a tyrant and suffering greatly. But he's also doing it for Zabuza, whose last request was to die beside the one he's only ever called his tool. For Haku, so reluctant to kill regardless of what horrors he had faced as a child. So insignificant, their deaths, especially in the grander scheme of things. But not. Zabuza tried to kill Yagura, after all, before fleeing Kiri, one of the first to truly strike a blow at Tobi, even if he hadn't known it at the time. And Kurama has always respected the man's loyalty to Kiri, his attempts to better it by overthrowing Tobi's cat's paw. Haku, too, with his incredible devotion to the man who saved him. They're not great men, perhaps, not even good men, but they have more facets to them than flaws. Enough virtues that Kurama can admire them. For them, for himself, for a Team 7 that's finally becoming what it always should have been, that's who this is for. From Konoha to Wave is almost 2 days walking, or little under a day on a flying fox. Momiji insists on leaving shortly after dawn, and Kurama doesn't protest, even though the fox still looks faintly weary. Momiji is just as stubborn as his sister, after all. And both he and Kurama know why they're pushing themselves. They fly faster, swifter than the wind that blows towards the ocean, and the ache of his broken ribs is almost gone, almost completely healed by the time the sun rises. The stab wound, too, is much better, close to ignorable now that his healing ability has returned. But he's still tired. The night felt endless, his deep and dreamless sleep like an indulgence there was no time for. But at least now he feels nearly human again. Once, Kurama was used to this kind of pace, back in his own time. But here he's become softer. It's not a bad thing, because the hardness of war is terrible and cruel, but it's inconvenient. A year and some odd months here, and he's far more like a normal shinobi again, more than he ever was. Not for anything would he wish himself back. In no way would he want to leave what he's found here with Naruto and Sasuke and Sakura and Kakashi, but there was a sacrifice made, a part of his edge taken in return for peace and joy, and while Kurama can't regret it, Kyubi-sama left you a gift, Kurama, Momiji says, as they soar across the familiar trees of Fire Country. Far in the distance, just edging onto the horizon, is a thin ribbon of blue, the ocean and wave beyond it. One beyond the name you carry. Perhaps, since there's a moment to prepare, now is the time to use it? Kurama keeps his eyes fixed on the approaching shoreline. He doesn't remember what time it was that Zabuza attacked the bridge before. Can't recall the position of the sun or the length of the shadows. But he hasn't yet felt the flare of chakra to announce a shinobi battle. Haku's ice mirrors would definitely be noticed. Momiji is right. They have a moment, however brief, and Kurama learned long ago to take advantage of whatever sparse bit of time the world granted. The seal on his wrist flares with chakra not his own, a subtle reminder from Obito as well, that he actually has a few moments to prepare, since he isn't neck-deep in battle yet, and he murmurs his thanks to both of them. Obito is right, as is usual when tactics are involved, and Kurama takes a deep breath and closes his eyes. The wind tugs and teases at him, pulls at his hair and whispers across his ears with the speed of Momiji's flight. But Kurama pushes the sensation out of his mind and focuses on the Kyubi's final gift. There's a reason that spy's ability affected him. The gift has become far closer to something like a bloodline, even if that's not quite all it is. Violet chakra flickers around him as he releases it, and he can feel the change. It's been a while since he used it, has kept it held in and tamped down since Kakashi came to him in that border town, because it's not a neat and normal thing. Not hardly, and coming from the Kyubi he wouldn't expect it to be. The chakra flares once before it settles, humming under his skin, and Kurama opens his eyes and lifts a hand to study it. His fingers have become longer, tipped with sharp claws, the same ones he used to draw blood for the time manipulation seal, back when all of this was starting. Violet eyes and streaks of darker purple like clan markings twining up his jaw, sharp teeth and sharper senses and a touch more speed and strength. This is the Kyubi's gift to him, a bittersweet blessing. Foreign chakra building up ahead of him draws his attention, makes him lean forward and urge Momiji just a bit faster yet, as his heart begins to pound. That was Kakashi, certainly, a flickering spark becoming a flame as he uncovered his Sharingan. A moment later he feels Naruto and Sasuke together, just as a burst of fire breaks over the treetops, enhanced and fed by wind, trying to clear Zabuza's fog, most likely. Kurama hadn't expected them to take the same role as last time. Sasuke against Haku, Naruto late, Sakura no assistance beyond guarding Tazuna. But to already be fighting back. They burst over the water just as the barely remembered feel of Haku's Hyotan surges, and Kurama swears. Momiji growls in answer, and the foxfire around his palms doubles and then redoubles, sending them racing forward over the waves. The bridge is there, barely at the edge of sight and already covered in thick, clinging mist. And Kurama sets his teeth, trying in vain to think of some sort of plan. Save Zabuza and Haku, obviously. Maybe send them on to Terumi Mei afterwards, since she must be nearly ready to stage her coup. But beyond that... One opening, Kurama realizes with a sudden start. There will be one opportunity where he can save both men, should everything go as he remembers. And between Zabuza and Kakashi, at least, there shouldn't be too much change. Kakashi will use Chidori, doubtless, because it's a definite kill if he does. Haku will most certainly abandon whatever fight he's in to save his master. And then, it's a slim chance, but maybe. Up, he tells Momiji, and circle. Let's not go in blind. The fox rumbles his agreement, twisting higher into the sky just as another flash of chakra comes from the bridge, followed by another, and another, and then a flare of chakra so achingly familiar it nearly makes Kurama tremble. Sasuke, he thinks, closing his eyes to feel it just a little more clearly. The Sharingan. It's not his Sasuke's Mangekyo. Not nearly. But it's a start. A step. He can't see through the mist or across the distance left between them, but it seems like things are mostly playing out as they did last time. It makes sense. Haku's bloodline is still strong. Still a trump card that the simple jutsus the Genin know won't be capable of breaking. The only one with a hope to break it. There. Kurama opens his eyes again as the intimately familiar red chakra rises like a fiery shroud, corrosive and furious and achingly, terribly lonely underneath all of that. His own chakra flares in response, recognizing what gave birth to it, its source. The Kyuubi. Kyuubi-sama, Momiji murmurs, ears folding flat back against his skull. He is angry. Kurama manages a faint, half-hearted smile. He's always angry. It's one of his more endearing traits. But he'll get a bit better soon, once Naruto learns how to talk to him. But we need to hurry. It will be ending soon. Down to the bridge? Remember Kakashi? The smell of his dogs? Find them. The mist is dissipating. Thinning. The Kyuubi's chakra is fading again. And Sasuke's is incredibly weak, but present. Kurama can still sense Haku and Zabuza. Sakura and Kakashi and Tazuna. They're all alive. He's made it in time. Then, through the vanishing haze, there comes a sound like the chirping of 1,000 birds.